beginning at verse 38, Luke chapter 10. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her."
I have to say, whenever I read this, I don't think Martha's a bad one at all. She gets a lot of my sympathy. You know, when we go as adults, the way that we live, we have to strive, we have to struggle, we have to be in control, or we try to, don't we? Because there's so many things going on. It's the most natural thing in the world. But of course, the world is slightly bigger than our capacity. You know that, don't you? And so we end up worrying or fretting or kind of chafing or complaining. And there's that feeling that whether it's in a church or a family group or just with somebody else, nobody else seems to quite understand us. We're just trying to take responsibility. We're trying to do what is right and good and get things done. We're trying to help. We're trying to serve. We're trying to be a blessing to Jesus. And those around us don't seem to help a great deal. They just don't get it. They assume that things just happen, you know. And I know that Chris probably experiences this, that the church just tidies itself. Chairs just straighten themselves. It's a miracle. How does this happen? You know, but we all know that, don't we? I remember doing a school assembly about who cleans your toilet. And they're like, "I don't know. It's just clean. It must be the toilet fairy." I mean, they had no idea that somebody has to clean the toilet in their house. And that's sort of, when you're the one that does the toilet or you're the one that does the chairs, you think, nobody else understands this. They don't get it. If something needs doing, what is it? You're going to do it yourself, aren't you? You know it's going to end up with you. And sometimes, just sometimes, sometimes it's an absolute pleasure and we do that and that's just fine. But sometimes it just grinds our gears a little bit and we start to feel a little bit taken advantage of, a little bit resentful, a little bit fed up. And then some religious person comes along and says, "Oh, you mustn't strive." That won't come out on the recording, but anyway, it's probably just as well. But in the world, sometimes the striver is called by different names. Lord Sugar, he's looking for a striver, isn't he, for his apprentice. He doesn't want someone that's kind of just, someone will sort it out, you know. He wants someone who's an entrepreneur, a visionary. We have a self-made man. We have those things that we kind of hold up. You know, they're seen as good things. Obviously, there are some people that are driven, they're unpleasant, and they make their work or they make, you know, something an obsession, and everyone around them seems to pay the price. But generally speaking, you know, in business and that kind of thing, you want someone that's got some get up and go, don't you? Because they make things happen. We like a mover and a shaker, don't we? Most of the time, unless they're trying to move us or shake us, in which case they're just annoying. But I came across a phrase that I really liked, and it talks about whether we see it as a positive thing or whether we see it as a negative thing. A fellow called Robert Wise talks about the churning place. I thought, what a lovely phrase, the churning place. For me, it's sort of in the pit of my stomach. For my mum, where she was used to talk about me being a pain in the neck, so I assumed that it was somewhere around here. But there's that churning place, that place of tension that gets us to do things. That sense that there's things to be done and they're not going to do themselves. You know that kind of feeling? that makes us restless, and it undermines our ability to just relax and enjoy and to be still. There's too many things to be done to be still, you know, aren't there? And so there's this tension. And that tension, rather than the activity or inactivity, that tension is partly what I want to talk about, really, tonight. Because last week we saw Jesus clash with the Pharisees about the Sabbath and Sabbath laws, what they'd done to the Sabbath, making it a burden and a slave driver. They had taken loving God and loving your neighbour out of Sabbath, so there was no rest, it was just rules. Tonight I want to kind of turn that on its head and just have a little look at what Jesus did have in mind. What's the alternative to an imposed rest where you're not allowed to do anything and it feels like a burden and a restriction? The alternative is life, and the alternative is rest. And rest is what God had in mind when he talked about Sabbath in the first place. Not the law, but the rest that Hebrews talks about is still available for us to enter into. And we have to say, from the outset, that it's not the most natural thing in the world for us. And so we do need a little bit of help, a little bit of an idea of how do we go about that. And so hopefully we'll think about that as well. First of all, let's just remind ourselves that God never asked us to meet all of life's pressure and demands by ourselves. That wasn't his plan. It wasn't his plan in creation, and it's not his plan now. He doesn't want us to be living as practical atheists, saying we believe in God, but living as if there isn't one. Living as if it all rests on us. That's practical atheism. No matter what we say, we live like it's all on us. Do you see what I mean? And so even just labelling it that makes us think that's probably something that we want to avoid. Nor did he demand that we win or earn his favour by kind of compiling and assembling a portfolio of good deeds. Ta-da! Here I, you know, bet you're pleased with me. That's not what he's got in mind either. It's not a game of let's all impress God. Because let's face it, if we know ourselves at all well, that's never going to happen, is it? You know, and so it's not about struggling along by ourselves, and it's not about earning favour or rest or reward or, you know, anything like that from God. Instead, he calls us to enter his rest. He actually says, that's what I want you to do. Enter my rest. Okay, so far so good. Now we've got two real people, Mary and Martha. Okay, they're sisters. I mean, even that just brings in an interesting dynamic, but we haven't got time for that. But what we have in these two sisters, Mary and Martha, is we have two approaches to life. We have Mary, who sits at the feet of Jesus, and everyone says, Mary sits at the feet of Jesus, brilliant. And then we've got Martha, who's busying around trying to be a good hostess, and everyone goes, Martha. You know, and so even in that, we kind of portray them as though, well, let's just carry on. Let's have a look at this. What do we know about them? First of all, they both love Jesus, don't they? They both love Jesus, and they both want to honour him in their lives and in their home. So they're not that bad, are they? We're okay. So far, so good. Now, both of them come to Jesus. Mary comes to listen, and Martha initially comes to complain. But she's got good cause. In one sense, neither of them are wrong. You know, we're not going to go into, you know, the fact that Mary was actually taking the place of a disciple at a rabbi's, sort of listening to a rabbi and that kind of thing. Not really interested in that right now. What I think is interesting is if you listen to it again, and I'm just going to have to find it because I didn't turn my page. Luke 10. Here we go. It's a really interesting thing. He says, Martha was distracted with much serving, and she went up to him and said, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her to help me. But the Lord answered her, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things. But one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. And I think that the NIV says Mary has chosen the better part, or perhaps that's King James, I can't remember, but that's what's in my head. Notice that he says Mary's chosen the good part, Mary's chosen a better part. He doesn't say that Martha has chosen the wrong part. Can you see that? He doesn't say Mary has chosen the right part and you've chosen the wrong part. He says Mary has chosen the better part. Can you see that? So he's not saying she's wrong. He's saying she's chosen a good part, but Mary's chosen a better part. Neither were wrong. And we're a bit naughty sometimes because we like to oversimplify and we like to have sort of someone be wrong so that we can learn from them. Well, Martha wasn't wrong. She wasn't wrong. She just hadn't chosen the better part. And in our life, most of the time, our choices, most of the time, if we're given a choice between good and bad, we're going to choose good, aren't we, if we can. If we're given a choice between right and wrong, most of the time we're going to choose right. But what God wants is the best. And quite often, when the enemy of the best in our lives is what is good. Because there's the good, and quite often we'll settle for what is good rather than for what is better. Can you see that? And that's why he wants to kind of draw us towards rest and say, what you're doing is fine, but actually there's something better. And we'll work out how that works as well. So when Jesus speaks to Martha, there's no criticism, there's no belittling. You know, sometimes we say things like, oh, they're so heavenly minded. You know that one? They're no earthly use. Well, and some of the others, they say, well, you're so earthly minded, you're no heavenly use. And so, you know, so there we are, we can split up the church and throw things at one another, because that's just what Jesus had in mind, isn't it? No. And so we need to just stop that, stop the name calling and the kind of categorizing people into Marys and Marthas, and just kind of go, actually, they were both okay. They just approached things in a different way. Because when we do that, it's not entirely fair or true. But what we do is we respond to pressures, we respond to demands in different ways. And notice that the problem for Martha wasn't being active. It was good that she was being active. She was being a good hostess. She was taking responsibility. Don't we want that in the church, for example? Don't we want people to volunteer and get active? No kidding. If you're not sure, talk to Ralph. He'll tell you all the things, all the rotas where there's gaps. You know, so it's not about being active. It's not about taking responsibility. What Jesus wanted to tackle with Martha was the fact that she was distracted and anxious and worried about it. It wasn't the activity. It was where her heart was at that she wasn't at rest. Can you see that? It was perfectly okay for her to be active and taking responsibility, but he wanted her to be in a position of rest. And so she was worried, she was upset, and she allowed that to spill over into her thinking about Mary. So she complains to Jesus, that's not fair. And in one sense, it wasn't. It's not like that was, you know, it's like she's not helping. You know, I think that's a fair enough thing to say. But it wasn't what Jesus had in mind for her. There's a better way. The solution to our drivenness and dissatisfaction isn't actually to make other people driven and dissatisfied as well. And that, to an extent, is what would happen. You know, make her get up and be miserable like me, because misery likes company. You know, why should I be miserable alone? You know, and again, that's human nature. I'm putting words into her mouth now. It's not entirely fair. But the Sabbath teaches us, the Sabbath in creation teaches us an important lesson. And this is where I want to kind of step back and just look at a principle, really. The Sabbath in creation isn't about law. It's not about thou shalt not do this and thou shalt not do that. And it's also not about just kind of blissing out and being irresponsible, just rocking up and just kind of, you know, and not noticing anything or anyone or anything like that. That really isn't the Sabbath that, as far as we see. Particularly where if we're so kind of restful and you know, just enjoying the Lord that other people have to do the work. That's not being mature at all. It's about pleasing God. It's about knowing God. Because we all want to have a real relationship with Him, don't we? We want to please Him in the things that we do. We want to live in His blessing. We want to live in His best. But somehow or other, we all learn through our childhood and then through kind of school and then the working life and all that kind of thing, that the way to get reward or the way to get blessing is to do things for other people that oblige them to reciprocate. Now, work is an obvious one. You provide time or energy or skill and you're compensated for that. You know, that's a straightforward thing. But actually in our social lives, I mean, the basis really of a civilized society is the law of reciprocation. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. We do favors. We kind of trade time and kindness and all those things. You know, we do things for other people and then other people do things for us. And there's a fellow called Robert Cialdini. He's a psychologist who looked at the whole area of that and saw that actually sometimes if you do something for someone else but don't give them an opportunity to reciprocate, they really feel a deep need to discharge that duty and will do something way out of proportion just to get rid of that feeling. And that's what scammers do. Basically, they'll give you a free pen as long as you use it to sign the check for their, and this kind of thing. But the point is that we are taught that if you just receive something, but don't do anything in return, you're a bit of a sponger, aren't you? You're taking advantage of people and that kind of thing. And of course, God does things in an entirely different way. He comes to us with grace. And that just does not work with you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. How are you going to do anything that God really needs? Yeah, God, let me impress you. I'll do this for you and then you need to do this for me. You know, it doesn't work like that because we're sinful and fallen. That is not going to work. And so we think that we have to do things for God to be pleased with us. We have to do this and do that and do the other thing and then God will bless us. Because that's how it would be with human beings in civilized society. And we know that's true, don't we? That's just the way it is. And I'm not saying anything against doing that on a horizontal level. You know, it's good to look after one another. It's good to have relationships where there's healthy give and take. Not manipulation or abuse, but just healthy give and take. But with God, it's something completely different. If you go back, let's do it. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 1. It's ever so easy to find. And I want you to notice the sequence of events, starting at verse 26, and we'll go down to, say, 29. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. And God blessed them. And then God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit, you shall have them for food." Now, I don't know if you noticed, but the sequence is all wrong. The sequence is all wrong. Because we think we have to do this thing, do this thing, do this thing, and we as we're doing that, we're providing for ourselves. And then if we do that well enough, God will bless us. And here we see that God's got it wrong. He must have done. Because what he does is he creates them, he blesses them, and then gives them fulfilling and rewarding work to do, and says, oh, by the way, just in case you ever get confused, I've already provided these plants and these trees for you for food. I've provided everything for you. I've blessed you. Now, from that position of blessing, not to achieve blessing, not to earn blessing, but because I've given you blessing, now you can go out and do your work. Blessed. It's a completely topsy-turvy thing. What on earth was God thinking? Can you see? That's the beauty of God's way of doing things. It's an entirely different world. They weren't working towards blessing. They were working from blessing. It wasn't something to be achieved. It was something to be enjoyed. Ah. And that's the difference. And that's really what I'm talking about with Mary and Martha. That's what I'm talking about in terms of rest. Even if we've got stuff to do, of course we're going to have stuff to do. But practically, what can we learn? Well, to a large extent, we live in a Martha world where there's stuff to do and we get distracted and anxious. We get a little bit resentful, we get a little bit fractious, and we complain about it. And so we live in a Martha world. There is busy work to do. But what we need to do is have the attitude of Mary while we're doing it. To actually go from a position of rest, a position of fellowship with Jesus as we do our busy work. Now, some people, and I'm not including myself in this, are really very mature and are able to do their work with the attitude of Mary all the time. I don't know if you've ever read Brother Lawrence Practicing the Presence of God. You know, there's this fella. I can wash dishes and pots and pans and constantly be aware of God's presence. Even my pot washing is worship and fellowship with the Lord. I haven't managed to pull that off yet. I really haven't. It's a short book. I've read it a number of times and it still hasn't worked for me yet. There must be something wrong with the copy I've got. Or perhaps it's me. I'm not sure. But I haven't managed that. Maybe you can. But there's a different thing. You know, if you can do that, great, God bless you. If you can't, it's okay. Because God understood that many of us won't. And so he put a rhythm into our lives. It's a day a week. It's a Sabbath. It may be short moments of quiet in every day, where we just reconnect with our Heavenly Father who loves us. And he has already blessed us. And he doesn't need our work, but he does love our obedience and our fellowship. And so we do our busy work, but then we just take a moment. Life is full of rhythms. If we can live with an awareness of the presence of God all the time, that's great. But if we don't, then just recognize that there's a rhythm to our life. There's a rhythm to our week. There's a rhythm to our day. Actually, there's a rhythm to every moment of every day. Because looking around, no, we're okay. Every one of you, since we've been here, have been breathing out and breathing in. Life is full of rhythms. And it's perfectly okay to work and rest in sequence. Just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. Remember that both Mary and Martha came to Jesus, and both of them heard him speak what they needed to hear at that moment. And in fact, I think it's really interesting that we only know what he said to Martha. We don't know what he said to Mary, but we do know that they both came. They both loved him. He loved both of them, and he spoke to both of them just what they needed to hear. But he let us eavesdrop on Martha. Because I think most of us need to hear that too. It's good. Our obedience to God isn't to a static code or law, but to a living God. And he's with us. And he's with us whether we're aware of it or not. You know, when you get completely kind of taken up in doing a task, he's still with you. He's still with you. And it's just having that rhythm where we become aware of him being with us. And he loves us and he blesses us whether we think we deserve it or not. Because we're not earning it. He wants us to be enjoying it. It's something altogether different. And it's through those rhythms and those seasons of life that we bear fruit. And the enemy of enjoying that rest is guilt. The enemy of enjoying that rest is that striving and fear that we won't be good enough to earn his blessing. And he's saying, but I've already given it to you. You know, just be aware of me for a moment and it will change everything. The lesson that we learn from Martha isn't that we should be inactive, but that he wants us to enjoy rather than be distracted and anxious. I just want to finish with this quote. This is a quote from one of the Celtic prayer books, I think the Northumbrian office. And he's talking about seasons, but I think we can use the word rhythm in a similar kind of way. And I'll just finish with this. He writes, I've observed through the years that most Christians have little understanding of the word season or rhythm. Our Lord is a seasonal God. His faithfulness never changes, but his seasons do. There are seasons in our life when the tree is green. There are seasons when it is dry. And there are seasons when, for the life of us, the thing looks dead. Now, does this mean that you're serving some capricious God who comes and goes by whim? Or could it be that it's only through seasons that growth may come? Fruit from a tree comes to us as a result of 3 or 4 seasons. We need to just relax and enjoy. And we can get busy while we're doing it. Good old Mary, good old Martha. Best of all, good old Jesus.